Welcome to the Influential Women Podcast, the podcast where we chat to some incredibly inspiring women about what they have battled and been through in their lives to possibly learn how we too can survive and make our own lives better. We'd like to forewarn you in this particular episode, however, that some of the interview may be upsetting, and we'd urge you to contact the necessary support charities or groups should you be dealing with any similar issues. So this is Nikki Bannerman, my influential woman today. It's Christine Clayfield. Hello and welcome, Christine.
Hello, it's so nice to be here. It's a pleasure to be here, actually.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you here. Thank you for coming to London. It's great to meet you. Christine Clayfield is an author, an entrepreneur, a domestic abuse survivor, and a self-made millionaire. So Christine, yours is a hugely emotional survivor story. First, can we just explain about your accent and why your voice is rather unusual?
Yes, first of all, my accent, I am born in Belgium. I was born in Belgium. I've lived there for first 30 or so years of my life. So that explains my accent. I now live in the UK and have lived there for 26 years. And my voice is so low, I start to think it as being funny, really, because people call me sir on the phone all the time. My secretary always says, they asked for Sir Clayfield again. But I'm just used to it now. The reason being is because it comes from too much trauma as a child, too much trauma as a young adult. And that apparently influences your life. So that's it. I'm quite happy to have it. There's nothing I can do about it. So that's it. Yeah.
And that medically has been told to you that can actually physically happen to your voice?
Yes, indeed. A doctor actually confirmed it at some point when I was on a training to speak on stage. We had to do like exercises and try and speak on stage with a group of people around you. One of those people was actually in my group, and she came to me and she said, "Can I actually ask you, did you have a bad childhood?" She did not know me. I never actually said anything about it at all. So I said to her, as a matter of fact, yes, I had. Why do you ask? And she said, well, because your voice is so low, and a lot of people with a low voice like you had a lot of trauma in the past. I was shocked, really. And I took that information to the doctor, and he actually confirmed it. He said, yeah, that can quite easily be one of the symptoms that you are left over with your bad past.
That's incredible. Incredible and brilliant how you handle it and everything in your life. There are many complex elements to your life and your story. Should we start with your novel? It's the true story of your own life, the abuse survivor story, No Fourth River. And you self-published it. How did it come about?
Well, I just mentioned the fact that I went to a training to speak on stage. I fulfilled that training, and also my fear of speaking on stage. So at some point in the last 10 years, I did speak on stage, and I gave them tiny little snippets of my story, of my abuse as a child and as an adult. And I could see people in the audience, they were sitting there literally crying. After my speech was finished, I had a standing ovation, and I went to the back to speak more about the product I was selling. And there was this massive queue of people wanting to speak to me. And I thought, what the hell? And they all came to talk to me, saying, you are such an inspiration. What you have been through is ridiculous. You should tell your story. I mean, they didn't even know anything. But that was really the defining moment for me, other than my children and my husband having told me you should write it. But that was the defining moment where I said, okay, I will now write my life story. So that's really how it came about.
That's amazing. And actually, with your story, you turned, you know, your broken and shattered life into not just getting through or over it, but literally coming out the other side victorious. I mean, it's incredible.
Well, thank you very much. I've tried hard. I've worked hard. And I think the very, very most important thing about my story is that, because I was indeed so shattered, but you've got to let it all go. You've got to forgive the people who've abused you, and you don't only have to let it happen, but you gotta make it happen. The let it happen, I think, is very important, because in a way, the body is a wonderful thing, and physical scars will heal, but mental scars don't heal unless you let it happen, and you let it heal you. That's, I think, quite important, and that is a thing that got me over everything, the letting it happen and the forgiving my abusers.
It's incredible. And the power of your mind, you really believe in that?
Oh, without a doubt, yes. The power of the mind is the most important thing that got me through everything, thinking I can change my life around, I will change my life around, positive mindset all the time. Again, the way I think about that is there's a lot of people who went through abuse and they don't ever get over it because they keep thinking about the abuse. They keep thinking they are to blame. They keep thinking what horrible people these abusers are, and they don't forgive them. So their abusers are constantly in their head. The thing that I think is important, that if you get busy, if you get so busy doing things you want to achieve, and the abusers I didn't allow to be in my head. I didn't give them any space in my head afterwards. They didn't deserve the space in my head. So I just got so busy and there was no other time even to think about the past.
That's fantastic. And that'll help so many other people healing. You know, it's just phenomenal. So we'll talk about your story. If it's okay to talk about the unimaginable cruelty you faced in your life. You suffered at the hands of an extremely tyrannical father in the diamond business. You had humiliation and bullying in your Belgian boarding school convent that you went to, and your violent ex-husband actually put you in a coma. I mean, this is just so shocking and harrowing for us to hear, but for you to have gone through. How do you cope with this circle of trauma?
Well, at the moment, I'm perfectly fine. At the time, obviously, it happened, I didn't cope very well at all. I was a bag of nerves, a very, very, very low self-esteem, very shy. And I just did not know, with the feelings in my heart, with the pain, with the constant abuse. I just went from abuse in school to abuse at home, and it was just always layers and layers and layers of more pain and more misery covering my body. But I had to see it through. And one of the ways I did, actually, which helped me a lot, is when I was about a young teenager, I started dreaming about twin girls. And my dream was that I would shower those girls with an abundance of love that I never had at all. And somehow that dream just got me through a lot of pain, because I saw them giggling, and in my dreams I would kiss them and hug them and love them. And yeah, that was quite important. But at the time it was very, very difficult, almost unbearable. But eventually, after the coma, I said to myself, I knew if I would go back, I would die, because the beatings got more frequently, lasted longer, were harder, the fists were harder, and I just knew I'm not ready to die. I need to change my life completely. And that's when I divorced him, and everything changed.
You are total inspiration. Your bravery is just phenomenal, and for you speaking out like this is just, it's heart-wrenching, and it's fabulous. I'm so proud of you.
Well, thank you very much. That is the main reason, really, why I do want to talk about it, because there's a lot of people who have been abused, either as a child or an adult or a teenager. I had it all. So when some of those people who have been abused only once, they don't get out of their circle of trauma and they can't start a new life. But some people just need to see from an example that it can be done, for them to then say, oh, okay, well, she done it, so I can do it as well, so I'm going to do it, which is one of the reasons which is so fulfilling as well at the moment. After having published my story, I get so many messages and social media messages and email messages from people who actually said, you know what, I've made my list, because at some point in the book I say that I made a list of the things I want to achieve. And people say, I made my list and I'm going to achieve it all. So thank you so much for your example. I'm changing my life around too. And that is very fulfilling for me, because that's the reason why I wrote the book, for other, to help other people getting over their stuff they had in their past.
That's fantastic. And it's not a bucket list, is it, that you put in your special purple frame? It's not a bucket list of things you want to do. It's things you want to be, really, or achieve, isn't it?
Yes, it's not a bucket list at all. It's just at some point after the coma, I decided to change my life around and I started to get into sports and to reading business books and books about selling and promoting and doing business and business plan. And one of the books that I read was one that had a quote in from Napoleon Hill. And he said, I can't remember the exact quote, but it comes down to whatever you think about it, you can achieve, you can actually achieve. And after having read that quote, I made a list of all the things I wanted in life and wanted to achieve. A lot of that, silly enough, was to do with my security. Like after the coma, my husband came after me with a gun and I had police protection, etc. So I never felt safe. And I wanted a house with CCTV cameras, with cameras all over the place so I could see what was going on, with security gates. So I started dreaming of having these big things. I wanted a loving husband. I wanted the identical twin girls. So all the things really that, not things I wanted to do, but more things I wanted to achieve. And that's what changed me, because my whole life from then on was based on my list.
And your list of miracles worked, didn't it? You did go on and have twin girls. Are they identical?
I did indeed, yes. And it's something that some people say, that's just not right at all. You can't do anything about it. It's up for debate whether you can or not. But I'm living proof that you can influence your chances of having twins by eating things, by even the sexual positions and stuff. So it is possible. I've done it. But I investigated a lot about it, spoke to several specialists. I've read so many books about it, put it all into practice, and it worked for me. And I'm ever so happy about that. And I'm really proud about it as well. I personally know it is the fact that I've applied all those things that I've studied. None of it was proven. I know that's the reason why we had twins, my second husband and me. But some people say, no, that's rubbish because you can't actually influence it. It's nature. Well, I leave that up for debate because you can't really. There's no conclusion.
It's hard to imagine how you could gain the strength to not only triumph over this unbearable cruelty, but to go on. As you say, you touched on sport, but you became a champion triathlete. You speak five languages. You run 15 businesses. And what we haven't mentioned is you've become a multi-millionaire's success story with five business books and now your own life story.
Yes, that's all true. The important thing about that is, though, that none of it, absolutely none of it, came easy. I have worked so hard all my life, or not all my life, since the day I decided everything is changing. I've worked so hard to achieve it all. And that is why, again, there was a secret superpower, and it's sort of a message from me to other people. There's a secret superpower if you had a bad past, because it's the determination to make a better future for yourself. In my case, a lot of it came about because I was put down for over 20 years. I had abuse and pain and misery. I was constantly told I was a useless individual, worthless. I would never make anything of my life. And the most important thing is when I was 5 years old and put into boarding school, I had to do the walk of shame, what I refer to as the walk of shame, because I used to wet the bed and the nuns looked upon it as like being a sin. Worked out after I was there for a few years. So every day I had to take my wet bed sheets and walk with it through the corridors, through the dormitories, with 249 people spitting at me, hurling at me, laughing at me, the nuns openly encouraging, saying number 49, which was my bed number, has wet the bed, make way for the bed wetter. That moment, that first time I had to do that, I mean, I had done it for years afterwards, but the first time I had to do that totally crushed me, even if I was only 5 years old. But I know that one moment after I decided I'm going to change, this is then many, many years later, was a defining moment for me, knowing that nobody will ever, ever, ever laugh at me again like that. So then the business person was created, and a lot of the things I've done is to make sure nobody will ever laugh at me again. I will prove them all wrong. I am not useless. I am not worthless. I can make something of my life, and I can even make a bit of money too. So up yours, basically. That could have been another title of my book, really. So that's important as well, that all the abuse things I've gone through, and I just said more and more layers of abuse were building up on me as I went through it. But after I changed, I just peeled away all the layers of abuse one by one to actually start afresh and completely become a different person, which is exactly what I did.
Gosh, it's just phenomenal. And you now get standing ovations for your talking, don't you? And actually what you touched on, you know, the humiliation you suffered from that health situation, that went on for about 20 years, didn't it? But it stopped the night that you married your second husband. That love and acceptance finally broke that pattern, didn't it?
Yes, it did. That was when I was 32 years old. I wet the bed every day until I was 32 years old. I mean, at the time, I was really embarrassed about it. But now that I've openly written my novel, it's all in there. So I'm not embarrassed about it anymore because it's gone. I've had so many horrible, cruel treatments over the years to try and stop my bedwetting. One of them was a guy called Dr. Kitzel. I had electroshock therapy, another event that changed my life forever, because the unfairness of that made me into a very rebellious person. So, the electroshock therapy didn't work, no medication, nothing. I must have tried 15, 20 different times over the years. But indeed, it is still unbelievable, but absolutely true. The day I married my second husband is the day I stopped wetting the bed, and I have never wet the bed again since. Now, how do you explain that? I can explain it, obviously. It was all in my mind. It was just the security that I would be loved and all my life, which I knew it would be when I married Richard. It was just, I still can't believe it. It was an unexpected miracle from heaven that changed, and I'm so grateful for it.
It's what you deserved, that love that you were denied, that you should have had, and you shower on your girls now.
Yes, indeed. That is sort of a bit of a purpose in my life, is my girls are very important to me. So is my husband. And I love them to bits. I always will. But the very important thing about Richard is he's the very first person who actually believed in me when I first met him. And after he said, nobody ever said, I believe in you, with all my plans and all the things I had on my list. But he said, yeah, you go, girl, you can do this. I can see it. You've got big potential in you. You do everything and tick your list off. And he supported me. And those days, he wasn't my boyfriend yet, because he had four children and he was in another country and he's still married. So it wasn't meant to be to start with. I mean, we couldn't be together, but eventually we got together. Yeah, so they are very influential factors as well, actually, my family.
Wow, amazing. So you got through all of this without antidepressants, with your resilience, without counselling. We're not in any way saying that people shouldn't go that route, but you did an evening course in psychology to understand everyone, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. I've always been against tablets, and today, in today's society, I do believe that a lot of people are given antidepressants tablets far too quickly, and then they get addicted to it. But I was actually given antidepressant tablets by doctors three times in the past, and I refused it. I said, no, I don't want it. I'm not depressed. I just need to sort out my life and get different directions going. I never actually had counseling sessions, as you said, but I did, in an attempt to try and understand my abusers, especially my dad, go to psychology lessons, and it worked. I've learned a lot from that. Also, not as a direct result, but it was probably an influencing factor, I did forgive my dad and forgive all my other abusers. I wrote a letter to my dad after he died, just for my own peace of mind, saying I'm sorry I was, because I was a horrible daughter. I was really not a nice daughter because of the situation I was in. The situation in school, at home, there was never any laughter going on. And after my electric shock therapy, I did become very rebellious. So when my dad died, was ridiculous and very, very difficult to live with. But again, I thought I can't have this guilt, drag this guilt with me all my life. That's just going to influence my life wrong, and I'm not letting it happen. And yes, I forgave him, and I even understand him. Why he did some of the things he did, he said some of the things he did. The conclusion really is his messages were right, but his ways were completely, utterly wrong.
I read the letter that you've put in your book, haven't you, No Fourth River, and that was heartbreaking too.
I know, that is, it's even if I read the letter now, I still get tears in my eyes, which doesn't happen very often when I think about my past. But it's a very sensitive letter, and it helped me a lot sending it to him in my mind. And that's the forgiving part. I think it's very important for everybody to do that, to try. Because nobody is born as a bad person, basically. That's just a fact. So whoever anybody becomes is all influenced by factors they've been brought up in. Like my dad, I found out afterwards, he came from an abusive background as well. And a lot of people do that. They educate their children the way they've been educated themselves, which was again a big lesson for me not to do that, which is why it was so important to do it right with my children. But yes, that's my dad's story.
You mentioned the possible secret superpower to putting the past behind you. I mean, it's really a story of hope, not just for adults, but for children to keep fighting and not give up. So many people do so easily. I mean, tips for not giving up?
I believe that is definitely also a very important thing in my life. For talking about young children, my motto is basically no bees, no honey, no work, no money. That means nothing is going to happen easily. Whatever is good to have is not easy to get, is what I say to my children too. So if you want to achieve things, nobody is going to ring your bell with a silver platter saying, here is your life, go enjoy it. Nothing will happen if you don't make it happen. You have to create things in your life. I look at it as life is a creation. It is given to you free, but you've got to create what it will be for you, and you got to create your life. Nobody else will do it for you. And that sometimes I think these days a lot of young people, they just think it's all easy and it's all coming without putting any effort in it. Well, that is certainly not going to happen. I've worked hard, and if anybody else works hard with the same positive piece of mindset, they can achieve great things too, I'm sure about it. But you have got to have the attitude of wanting to make it, wanting to achieve, wanting to make hard, to work hard.
You're so very wise.
Thank you.
Now, your health still suffers. You get anxious if you sit with your back to the door, and your short-term memory has suffered. And that's a long-term thing. How do you cope with that?
Again, I'm the sort of person that when something I've learned in my life after the coma, when life throws you bad things, just throw it back. You have to deal with those things, and you have to always think positive. My short-term memory is indeed sometimes a problem, but I don't let it affect my daily life. I have sticky notes at home every not far further away than 3 meters in my house. There's a pen and sticky notes. So it doesn't affect my business life at all, because as soon as you write something down, it moves from your short memory to another part of the memory, and then there's not short-term memory anymore, because you will constantly read what you've written down. So I don't let it affect my life. The thing about wanting to sit against, like when I go to a restaurant, I will always choose the seat against the wall where I can control everything, where I can sit with my back against the wall, and that will stay with me all my life, because my husband used to attack me from the back with fists and stuff. So I will never forget that. It's sort of like a protection thing that will stay with me. Although you forget the past, the past in a way is always present and will always be present in the present because of those things. Then I got heat control is out of control. I can't sort of regulate my own body temperature. That's also an important thing. It all has to do with the amount of hormones and certain hormone levels in your body. That as a child, the stress hormone cortisol is really important in that, which as a child was used up basically. And that's why it's not sort of working anymore as it should now. But I deal with that, and it really, really doesn't make me unhappy. It doesn't affect me. I just look at everything with a positive mind, and that's part of me. So what am I going to do about it? I've got it. And that's another message I do want to give to the world. Whatever happens, it's no good. Go and sit in the corner and cry, because it's not going to change it. And that's what I could have done after all my misery, and what some people do. They do blame their past or the economy or outside factors for who they are today. And some of them do sit in the corner and cry all their life. It's not going to change it. You need to find ways to deal with it and be positive. Always, always be positive. Negativity is not good for anybody, especially not for yourself.
You are so wise. We're all going to learn from this. We're going to get so many emails and letters from this. So which strong men or women have inspired you then?
Strong men and women. Well, there is definitely Mr. Napoleon Hill that I've already mentioned. If I would not have read his book, maybe I would never have made my list. So he's definitely a big influencing factor in my life. Otherwise, outside my husband, with my second husband, which I've already mentioned, I can't actually say there's a lot of other influencing men have been in my life. After there have been quite many bad ones, but inspiring ones. I think my second husband is definitely the one to put on a pedestal here, because he's the one who got me through a lot. And when I did have like a little flashback, he would always find the right words to tell me, no, go, and you are not useless. And yeah, I do have a lot. I have to thank him for all the time, for he's partly made me, without a doubt.
Amazing. A big shout out for Richard, bless him. We love him. And women, J.K. Rowling, Oprah, they inspire you, is that right?
Yes, of course, yes. The people who, there's quite a few people like J.K. Rowling. She didn't have an easy past either. Oprah didn't either. So I do admire them because I know how difficult it is. As an outsider, sometimes it might look easy. Oh, well, she's got over it and she's obviously a strong person. But it's not that simple. It's you've got to constantly fight those battles in your mind, know how to fight them so you win. So they are definitely, all these people with bad past, they are big inspiration.
And quite rightly. So the proudest moment of your career or your life, Christine?
The proudest moment, dare I say, conceiving my twins, but probably not, because that will spark debates. I think the decision for me to actually decide, that's it, I'm done with this. Over 20 years of abuse, I really can't do this anymore. And that moment when I decided, it's a bit like when I was in a coma, it's a bit like during that coma, all my life was flashing in front of me. And then when I woke up, I just said, what the hell? No, this is done. So that moment when I decided enough, that is my proudest moment.
So you remember some of the thought processes during the coma?
Yes, I don't remember it, but that's how it felt, as I write in my book. When I woke up, it is as if I had gone over it all. I don't actually remember it when I was in a coma, but that's how it felt. And that's when I immediately decided, what the hell, no, I'm not doing this anymore. So I don't know whether I actually thought it during the coma, but I felt like I did.
Gosh, and that was for 10 days, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and that's when I when I indeed woke up and when my first husband came to visit me, pretending, he said, oh, forgive me, please, I'm going to follow lessons, like he always did after he abused me. He was a master in apologies. He should have been an actor, really.
Can we talk about where your passions are then? What are your hobbies? Are you still a triathlete?
No, I don't do sports anymore at all, actually. I should really start it again. But no, my hobbies, I do like going out for meals. I like talking business, any aspect of it. I like traveling. I think my biggest hobbies is loving my husband, really. That's on the top. I should have mentioned that first. And spending quality time with my husband and my children, which is not easy because they've gone out of the house now. My husband is in a show, a theatre band, so he's not always home. But yeah, spending quality time with them is also very important.
That's a lovely priority for your passion. Do you have a mantra for living your life then?
I think I've already mentioned the most important one, or one that I believe is really important, is no bees, no honey, no work, no money. Basically, whatever you have, you got to work for. And another quite important one, I believe, is that the only limits that you have are the ones that you accept. Otherwise, you can just do whatever it is you want to achieve if you just put in the work and the mindset to achieve it.
There was something on one of your Facebook sites that said, life is not about finding yourself, it's about creating yourself. And you have touched on that, but that quote was from George Bernard Shaw, I think.
Yes, which is something that I indeed believe in, that you have to create things. Make your own list is what I would say, whether it's a new kitchen or painting the hall, or it hasn't got to be ridiculously big achievements, but if you've been thinking about it for years, write it down, hang it somewhere where you can see it everywhere you go, work towards it, towards your goal, and just do everything you can to achieve it, and just make your list. That's so many people, I didn't expect that to happen, but so many people did come back to me with that. Yeah, I've done my list. People I've known, yeah, I've read your book, I've done my list. it's amazing. So that is, in a way, they are creating their life, they're creating their list, they're changing things. But the most important thing is that nothing in life is given to you free. You just have to put in the work and the effort to create your life. And I love that quote, which is, there's so much truth in it.
And is that how we become a multimillionaire then? How do I become one? One of your books teaches us how to go from newbie to millionaire. That's won awards, hasn't it, your business book? I mean, how do we become a multimillionaire?
Well, that's not going to happen, I'm afraid, tomorrow. In my case, it took 26 years of ridiculously hard work. The book that you referred to is from internet marketing, which is one of the things that I have been doing since roughly 2010, I think. So that's now about 8 years ago, is setting up a little niche books, niche businesses online with affiliate links. So it's sort of automated income through internet marketing. I discovered the power of automated income, which is ridiculously addictive. Because you set up a website and then you wake up one morning and you've got in your email, oh, you've got 5 sales. Oh, that's nice. Because obviously it's in America and it's worldwide. So the affiliate links work worldwide. So internet marketing is definitely a big potential. I've always been good from the moment I found a business person and the business entrepreneurial side in me, in finding gaps in the market. And that's how I started up several businesses over the years. Some of them I've sold. But that's how it all worked. Finding gaps, setting up businesses, have a commercial mind, put in a lot of work, and the income from all the different businesses is what did it for me. Some people have one business and do really well. I've never believed in putting all your eggs in one basket. So I've always did different angles in business. Just if one goes down, you've still got all the other ones from that point of view. So yeah, it worked for me. But again, it's really, really hard work. It has not come easy. It's now, only now, I can take it easy. because now I'm so lucky that I don't have to work anymore if I don't want to, but that will just never happen. My husband always said, oh, don't be so stupid, you're never going to stop working, which is probably right, because I enjoy it so much, because I enjoy achieving. Now, whether that is still because of my past, because I still think I need to prove to people that I can do it, or whether it's just my character, is something I will never know. But Richard says it's the latter one.
But it's working.
It's working, yes, indeed, indeed, yes.
What's your next goal then? I think there's another book in the offing, isn't there? Or you're thinking movie?
I'm thinking movie, indeed. I've got two big goals, really, for the next year or so, or 2 years. Is first of all, to find a traditional publisher, which is not easy, but I will just keep going till I find it, because I want to reach the whole world. And I want my book to be on all the bookshelves in the world, in all the airport shops, when you walk in, no Forth River's there, so I can reach as many people as possible with my message. And then when that actually happens, when it will be successful, I'm hoping that the movie companies will knock on my door anyway, but failing that, I will just go and find the movie companies myself. So yeah, there are indeed my two things, find a traditional publisher and then a movie. There's loads of people who already said, again on social media, this book should be a movie, should it be a really good movie. So if any movie director is listening it, go my website and contact me. So yeah, that would be lovely. That would be fantastic. It's a big aim and a big goal, but I've reached big goals before, so I'm positive at the moment. I will do it.
Goodness me, you're so motivated. You're nonstop. Do you sleep?
Yeah, I do actually. You can't work and not sleeping. Well, some people can. Margaret Thatcher used to be able to do it for 5 hours, but no, I do actually. I'm the sort of person that does need. I need 7 hours sleep, or I can't really function very well without that.
Lastly, I mean, we've had a phenomenal amount of messages and stories and motivation from you, but is there any other message you'd give to inspire and influence women or men?
I think the most important thing is that whatever you've gone through, your past does not have to define your future. You can change, you can leave your past behind, but as I mentioned somewhere at the beginning, you've got to let it happen. And you've got to make it happen. But don't think because your past was bad, your future has to be influenced by it. You can look at the misery you had in your past, and you can turn that around in the success you will be in the future.
So Christine's just going to read a couple of paragraphs from her book about what actually motivates her.
I put myself in situations that made me happy. I made plans, I set goals, and one by one I started to achieve them. I began to choose what happened to me, and I started making happiness a regular part of my day. My confidence grew, everything around me changed. I didn't look back, but instead I looked at the beauty of the future. Suddenly my heart was filled with determination and courage, and these helped me to build my businesses and gain the success I now enjoy. I have learned what is truly important and how precious life and our loved ones truly are. It's not what's in your pocket that matters, but it's what's in your heart. I am by no means perfect, but I have become a good person. I stand for traditional values and love, and I love with all my heart.
Thank you. That's very special. Oh, look, we're both getting emotional here. And our listeners will love that.
No problem at all. It is my total pleasure to have done this interview with you. And I hope that somehow I can touch other people's hearts, and maybe people who haven't had it easy might just take this and say, okay, right, you did it. I'm going to do it too. I'm going to change my life. So all the best to everybody. Go for it.
Oh, you definitely will. You've touched me. You'll have touched a million hearts out there. Thank you so much, Christine.
Thank you very much.
You're one strong, powerful and very brave woman?
Well, brave, definitely. All the rest I leave up to the others, but I was brave, definitely, without a doubt.
And thank you to Richard.
Yes, thank you to Richard, and thank you to Richard's four children, and thank you to my children, two children that all had a big influence in my life.
This Influential Women's podcast is presented by Nikki Bannerman and co-produced with Juliet Nichols. Please keep listening for more podcasts and subscribe for free on Audioboom on iTunes and Apple Podcasts.